Thanks a lot, Don. I want to tell you a story, and it's probably a fairly typical story of a consulting statistician working in an agriculture research environment. Hopefully, as we go through this story together, I want the scientific membership of our societies to, you know, to recognize that when one does a really complicated field experiment and it takes years to collect the information, that it's not going to be analyzed in a day. I just really want people to really make the commitment. If you're going to make the commitment to doing this type of work, see it through to the end. And I'll also say this caveat: I don't really think this is done. Even though this is going to publication in Plant Disease in the next month or so, I don't think this is quite done yet. That's just the way it is. This project came to me through one of our ARS scientists in Stuttgart, Arkansas, Steve Brooks. He's a crop physiologist, plant physiologist, and he's started to work with rice smut, and specifically these two types, false smut and kernel smut. And a little bit about these two diseases. False smut is becoming a heavily emerging disease, and it's widespread worldwide. And kernel smut is a much more chronic minor disease, and it has some sporadic outbreaks. So he, of course, has some interest, and especially in southwest Arkansas, where rice is a very major field crop, they have some strong interest in trying to alleviate the prevalence of smut in their cropping systems. So the problem with this, and where he comes into play, is the idea of disease management. While there's no source of disease resistance yet identified in the germplasm of rice, and some things they've noticed over time is that soil nitrogen fertility does influence the disease severity. Fungicides can be effective, but they are highly impractical. Neither disease will produce visual symptoms until after grain fill, and that's a little too late for worrying about fungicide application. So what's needed right now is integration of disease-resistant germplasm and cultural management techniques to control the disease at production scale. Oops. I went backwards. I found the backwards button. So the objectives that Steve was working towards were to identify smut-resistant rice varieties in a disease nursery with controlled fertility levels. I'm not going to talk about that part today, but that will be in the manuscript when it comes out. What I'll be talking about today are determining the effects of crop management practices, and specifically the rotation, the tillage, and the fertility on disease severity. And I'm going to be showing analysis using a generalized linear mixed model application, specifically through the SAS product, ProcGlimix. And I am not promoting the use of SAS in any way, but this is a very common package in our statistical toolbox. So I think I just thought it was a really appropriate mechanism and a venue to introduce to our scientists how you can be utilizing, how you can be thinking about your data, especially as I show you this data set and how I worked through it, how things worked out for me. Okay, so this study was actually part of a multi-year, multi-cropping systems rotation study that Merle Anders, who's on with the University of Arkansas system, also in Stuttgart, Arkansas, he has been working in this, looking at some different crop rotation ideas with rice, and he's had this field study set up for probably 6 or 7 years now. And when the smut started making an appearance, that's where he asked Steve to maybe collect some data off of his field plots. And then, of course, Steve collects this data, and a couple of years later he says, hey, Kathy, can you help me analyze my data? So that's where I came into this process. So just to give you an idea of how this design layout was done, there were four, Morrill has four blocks, and here's an example of the block layout. So I have my tillage application. We have a no-till and we have conventional till. So these are what we call our main plots, and we obviously have a split there in our model. We have within that, we have the fertility, which we have an enhanced fertility and a standard fertility, which I'm calling here today. And if we look here across our tillage and fertility, we have the rotation. So the rotation is a strip plot within our full block. And I'll get more to rotations on the next slide of what those were. But just for showing, we have a continuous rice and we also have soybean rice involved in this. Well, the data that Steve started collecting in 06, and then he also collected in 07, and he's also collected in 08 and 09, but this data is 06, 07, we have different varieties that were used in those years too, because Merle is planting the varieties of rice that are going to be used by the grower, the farmers in those years. And so cultivars change and hybrids change and things change. So Merle's trying to keep up with what's really going on in production agriculture. And so I'll just say the varieties then are occurring within those rotations, depending on what year the rice is actually being planted in that particular rotation. Okay, so a little more about these rotations. There's actually 10 different rotation types that were stripped across the field blocks. And highlighted here in this reddish, and I do apologize for any colorblind people, as David pointed out earlier, but continuous rice with a wheat intercrop, soybeans with a wheat intercrop rotation, and a soybean rice and rice soybean, and then also a soybeans with wheat rice wheat intercropping. It wasn't really that they were randomly selected, but these were the particular rotations where smut was seen to be occurring. Smut is not occurring in a rice, soybean, corn rotation, probably because, I mean, it's been a while since I've had plant pathology, but, you know, the smut's just not gonna overwinter 2 years in a row and show up on rice again. And so maybe as an extension person, one would say, well, that's the rotation you should be doing to get rid of the rice smut, but that's not a realistic application. So in these particular five rotations, that's the data that was collected out of the total of 10. Oh, and another thing I really want to point out here, so what I really want to emphasize is on this strip here, within the block, within that fertility and that tillage, that's our experimental unit. Okay, so that's important as we move along, as I show some things with the analysis. So I'm pointing that out right now to keep in your mind for later. And as I said, the particular rice varieties that were used in the 2 years of collection. So in 06, we had the Wells cultivar and the Cybonic cultivar. 07, Wells cultivar was used again, but we're replacing that Cybonic cultivar with an XL723 hybrid. Okay, so since they're not repeated, and also since the interest is dealing with what are the varieties being used in actual production systems, these are random effects. These we're really wanting to infer the range on all rice varieties that are being used in production agriculture in that particular year of the study. So, okay, so when we do an experiment, we collect data. one of the first things that one should do is go ahead and look at what's the distribution of my data. And on these particular measures, what made this also a very interesting project that Steve got himself involved with was the idea that he wasn't just wanting to go out in the field and do a rating, which is so commonly done with disease, to go out in the field and maybe give a 0 to 9 rating. He really wanted to give it a quantitative measurement. And so he came up with this idea with the false mutt. He wanted to actually have a physical quantitation of the number of sori per kilogram of seed. And then with the kernel smut also, it would be the number of symptomatic kernels per kilogram of seed. And with the kernel smut specifically, I know he has some really great student helpers, and they have a light box, and they're counting upwards of 200 grams per field plot of the seed, and coming up with a value of the number of symptomatic kernels for a whole kilogram of seed. So that's where the measurements are coming from, and this is very. That was his fear going into this, is he didn't really know if the disease community would really go for this, because everybody likes the disease ratings. But his opinion coming into it, and I have some agreement with this, is what does that really mean at the end? I really want to be able to quantify the amount of disease I have in my field plots, and how what I'm trying to measure, how it does affect the variables in my study. And also, he took a measurement of yield for interest. So when we talk about sampling distribution, we have our yield response here, and that looks very normal. But when we take our sampling distribution of either the smut, small, false, or kernel, that doesn't look so normal. And I actually just saw, last week, this new intro stat book that's coming out that was being advertised, and one of the chapters in it is actually something like rule of thumb, biological data equals log normal distribution. And I thought, well, that's not so far off. So we definitely do not have some sort of normal distribution here. Great, we look at our data, our distribution of our sampling population, but how many people actually look at the distribution of their errors? So if I take the same data, I want to look at the distribution of errors, and this is becoming really easy to do, especially with some of these diagnostic tools. David showed several of these in the first talk, and these specifically are using the SAS ODS graphics options, and you can get these out of mixed or GLIMIX procedure with what I'm going to be showing you here with this type of model. It's, I think, as David said, with 9.2, ODS graphics is standard. It's no longer an experimental add-in. So if I look at my distribution of errors, well, yeah, yield is still normally distributed errors, but here's my zero, and my false smut, it's got a lot of tails, as does my kernel smut. I am not meeting the assumptions of ANOVA here, right? I mean, we remember that, independence, normality, homogeneity of variances, errors are independently, identically, or normally distributed. And I do not have that going on here with my smut response. Commonly, when we see something like this, we would probably transform the data in some way. And this graphic here is an example of just all the different possibilities you can have with the log normal distribution, but there are lots of possibilities in the family of distributions. And I'm not really gonna get into that today, but just to keep that in your mind, that there's just lots of possibilities out there. And so one would normally take a log normal distribution, transform it in some way, and then you run your analysis of variance on that. And then you get an output, and then you have to ask yourself, what does that all mean? Because now I'm not in my distribution that I started with. What does that biologically mean? But where we're going with all of this, and where I'm going today with introducing to you, is this idea in the stat applications is called generalized linear mixed models. So when I was building the model, it's pretty easy to pick out what my fixed effects were and what I'm interested in doing parameter estimation on, the mean, the standard error, and talking about how the field layout was there. We had our tillage, our fertility levels, and the rotation effects. And just, you know, briefly how I would write this in a fast code model, false smut, the tillage, bifertility, rotation, the main effects, and also the two-way interactions of interest. I've got this slash here, distribution equal log normal. So what the GLIMMIX procedure does is going to model, using this command, I'm going to model the logarithm of the response variable as a normal random variable. So the mean and variance are estimated on a logarithmic scale, assuming a normal distribution of the log of the response y is assumed to be normal. And just for terminology's sake, this is done through what's called the link function. So you can think of it, the link function is transforming the mean, not the data. Okay, continuing on, and we know that we have a lot of random effects going on in this design as well. Those are where our sources of variability are coming from. I have the block effect. I have the variety within the rotation effect, as we talked about earlier, how Y varieties are random in this particular system, situation. And also, since there were 2 years of data, year is really random as well. And this is where the model building gets really fun. You know, how do I work with year? And also, if you remember, I talked about that what the experimental unit is in this situation, where I'm using the same plots over and over. They have that strip rotation. That rotation is there. That field plot is in place for many, many years. So I really started to think in terms of, yeah, great, I've got this year effect going on probably. I definitely have a year variable here. But I am dealing with correlation in the use of these plots. So how am I going to work with that? And that's where I'm still thinking about this a lot. But this is how I'm deciding to work with it so far. So when I was working on running different model schemas, how year was fitting into it, I really wasn't seeing a lot of variability associated with year or any of the interactions with year effect. But I hadn't even tried working on this idea of the correlated error with the plot usage. So I kind of left year off to the side. I also had done some other things where I was looking at, you know, the response variable by year, and I really wasn't seeing a lot of discrepancy from year to year. So I was feeling pretty comfortable of not really working with the year variable in my model per se. So it's not in my final model. But I was still really interested in dealing with that the correlated error aspect of my individual plots. So I'll get to how I dealt with that in a second. But what I will say also about that random effects statement, I use what's called a solutions option, and in a few slides I'll get to what are called BLUPs, best linear unbiased predictors, how those were calculated for the varieties, and how we use that information in our reporting of the data. So I've got that correlated error issue with the plots going on. And with proglimix, there's no repeated statement per se. And I also hesitate to really call this a repeated measure. It's probably a semantics thing. But for me, I just really wanted to dissociate from that and really just talk about how the plots, there's probably a correlation going on because of their use from year to year. But to incorporate that into the model, in GLIMMIX you use a second random statement, and it's this terminology here, this underscore residual underscore, which can be used on its own to deal with over dispersion in your model, but this is also how, along with this subject, equal, which is our block by variety within rotation, our experimental unit, that calls up and lets it know, oh, you're wanting to deal with this in a repeated measure sort of way. So you also need to identify, just like before in a repeated statement in Proc Mix, what covariance structure are you wanting to deal with. So doing all the diagnostic work with that, the compound symmetry in this particular situation was the best fit for this model. And along with that, this compound symmetry structure I found really imposed no constraint on the variance, on the standard errors that I calculated. And I just really felt this approach was allowing me more inferential interpretation of the rotation and the variability of the random variety within the rotation. Okay, now this looks really big because we're in such a big screen here. but I don't want to go on and on about the error terms or anything like that. This is, I actually had somebody ask me earlier when I was telling them about the talk, and they were kind of excited, and it was a statistician person, and they said, "Oh, how many error terms do you have?" And I said, "I don't know. I didn't really keep track. I just have a lot." But this table here, up to block, these are our fixed effects, right? And then we've got our block and our interaction terms all the way down to residual, or our random effect statements. What I want to point out on this table is where variety within rotation and variety by block rotation, where that comes in, within the error term of rotation. You know, if I had disavowed that and not really worried about variety or how I was working with rotation, I just wouldn't even see these terms showing up here. So my personal philosophy is, you know, to work with the experiment as it was designed. And that's what I really was trying to do as I was working my way through this. So that's just food for thought for thinking about analysis later on for you and your own personal work. Okay. I had a great internal debate about including this particular table in the talk today. And because what it is, this dimensions table, what I notice when I'm working with scientists in ProcMix or any sort of output from SAS is that they just gloss over everything in the output except what are my p-values, right? Well, the reason I bring this dimensions table to the fore is because it's a really important diagnostic table to help you in deciding and determining and realizing, do I really have my model written the way I think I have my model written? And I'm not going to really spend any time on this particular because I think, I mean, we could talk about the topics of this table in like a whole afternoon symposium, and I probably still wouldn't be able to explain it well enough. But what I want to, you know, point out is that when we start getting into generalized linear mixed models, there's this terminology called G-side and R-side. So if you're thinking about going into applications like this, I really encourage you to read up on this type of terminology. And for this particular model, our G-side is identifying those factors, those terms that are involved within the link function, which I mentioned earlier, which is how the process works for the transformation. And the R-side are outside the link function. And so in this case today, it's because we have that so-called repeated measurement. And all the way down to our number of observations that we have in our data set. Okay. So whenever we have a random statement, we're going to get a covariance parameter estimates table. And some nice things I like to point out to when I work with the collaborators, the scientists on this project, is that with the model, I still have got quite a bit of variance left in my residual to do some of the testing. You know, it's in my error term, and it's able to test what's going on with the fixed effects, the treatments, tillage and fertility and whatnot. This is representative because we have that repeated statement. This is representative of that variety by block, or really it's block by variety within rotation. There definitely was some variability going on from the use of those plots within the rotation like that. But interestingly, maybe a little smaller than I thought it would have been, that variety within rotation as a whole is not really a large, huge chunk of the variance. But who knows what's going to happen as they continue on with this project. Okay, so then, of course, this is what the scientists really care about. Is what's my effect? What am I seeing? What's different? Definitely see some significance happening with the tillage. Remember our response here is a smut on the rice. Tillage is in effect. There's definitely a trend happening with fertility. Not so much with tillage by fertility. That rotation effect, very strong influence here, and tillage by rotation as well. Not really anything happening with fertility by rotation that we can tell so far in the study. Okay, so then remember with that random statement in the model, I have this solutions option, and these will be the solutions for random effects parameters, and it's going to give you a whole readout, every term that's in the random statement. I just wanted to focus in on that variety by rotation and how we're going to use this information to really talk about difference in the variability of the smut response on different varieties within a particular rotation. So here's my rotation ID down here of the five rotations that were used in where the data was collected off of in the study. And what I want to just point out here, this estimate column, those are our blups. And when I was working with the scientists, I said, okay, here, if you think about the intercept of our model of the line here is zero, what's positive versus what's negative? Sidbonnet, Wells, and XP, does that make biological sense? And they said, well, yeah, we definitely had something different going on with Sidebonnet than we did with the Wells or XP723. So I'll show you here an output table in a little bit. And this is very similar to a graph that David showed in the first talk, where we have what's called this diff plot or diffogram, a really nice way to look at our multiple comparisons. In this example, this is the false smut response on rotation. So we can come in and look and see easily who's significant from different from each other. So that rice-rice rotation has some difference with the soybean-rice rotation, and then who along this diagonal I'm not seeing any significant difference between the rotations. This is I guess I call it a mean plot, also through the LS mean statement. And I used here as an example this t the tillage by rotation interaction. Showing rotation here on the x-axis, we have the two rotations, no-till and tillage. The dash line on the top. So one can really see nice and easy and visually where those differences are occurring. And so I'm in agreement with David. There's some things you can see much more easily on a graph than what I would be able to pull out numbers-wise on a table. So not necessarily maybe for a publication, this particular style like this, but it was really easy for me and the scientists to communicate back and forth about what sort of specific contrast questions they wanted to be asking. And I've included this table and the next table. These are what we're actually going to be in the manuscript. This is how we actually decided to go forward and present the information. This example in this table here, I'm just showing false smut results here. But this is the LS mean value. So this is on a log normal scale. And of course, their concern is I'm dealing with log normally distributed data, and what does that mean biologically, and how am I going to talk about it to my in my journal article? And I mean, we had the lines output, the difference, okay, it's definitely different, conventional tillage response from no-tillage response. But we also decided to include, we just call it the mean column, and these are the actual, just the raw means from that particular. So it's not any LS mean, there's no model incorporation, but it's just a descriptive information so that the readership can understand, oh, yeah, I see what they're talking about. I see how that is, but you know, we didn't run statistics on this because that would be inappropriate. Who knows what we would have seen if we would have ran the stats on it as a normally distributed variable, when in fact it truly is a log normally distributed response. And then lastly here, this is how we worked in the idea of the BLUP and how we are talking about these, the variability of the varieties within a particular rotation. Steve did a really nice job writing up and talking about how, you know, cybonnet within continuous rice and what a different level of variability it has from, you know, say the Wells or the XL723 within a continuous rice rotation in the same study. So being able to present that in a table form is really helpful with the reviewers so they could numerically see, and also here, this again, the raw mean, so that they can visualize the information and how it's interpreted for future work. So that's all I have for today. I'll take any questions if there is any time. Thank you. Sure. Were you here when I first started? Okay. This isn't actually categorical data. This is actually quantitatively measured, so I just wanted to make that distinction. But when it comes to dealing with categorical data, I don't know about a particular blurring the categories, you know, a one rating into a two rating per se, but within the GLIMIX package, there is the capability of working with a multinomial distribution. And I've not myself worked personally with a data set in the multinomial distribution, but I've seen it being presented at some workshops, and it looks really nice. With using the link and the iLink functionality and the ability to back transform to what the actual value is later on, that functionality is there. Thank you.